This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday, the 11th of December, 2020. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. Your other reader today is Jane Harding.
Hello.
The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 11th of December have been edited by Sonia Phillips, Sheila Shepherd and Sheila Shepard. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking Newspaper and the Winchester Talking Magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Liz Legrees on 01962 861 229. And if there's a problem with your Sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging it before returning it as faulty. I'm afraid there's some resurfacing occurring outside the studio for a few days, and we apologise in advance if the sound of this interferes with today's recording. Now, the main headlines this week are Cathedral Lights Up, Vision for Future of City's Barracks, and Camp for Asylum Seekers Proposed. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Jane?
And very appropriately, that is Cathedral Lights Up. Winchester Cathedral marked its reopening to visitors and restarting of public services last week in a sparkling candlelit ceremony led by the Dean before turning on the Christmas lights. Choristers sang around the Christmas tree as the lights were switched on, which not only included the giant tree, but this year a new community lantern installation that changes colour with the lights projected onto it, and four more trees across the cathedral. The cathedral has also illuminated the outside of the ancient building and its grounds, adding a glow of festive cheer for any passers-by. The Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester, said, "Although we could not hold a public event for switching on the lights to ensure everyone's health and safety, we still wanted to illuminate the cathedral and grounds. We hope to bring comfort and joy to as many people as possible, whether that is enjoying the festive lights and the Christmas trees, visiting the virtual Christmas market, joining a service in person or online, or coming in to see the beautiful lantern installation." The installation is the result of a community art project where people were invited to make and send in paper lanterns with their own decoration and message inside. Hundreds of lanterns were sent in before being curated by Reverend Jill Sacchini, artist priest. "It has been a heartwarming project to be part of. We've received letters from those who took comfort in creating the lanterns, in remembering someone dear to them, as well as those who simply had fun crafting the lanterns with their families. I hope that seeing all the lanterns together, suspended in the nave and beautifully lit, will bring festive cheer to many." The cathedral is open from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. each day, and there is more available information online. And this is accompanied by four beautiful photographs. One is of a huge Christmas tree outside the west front of the cathedral with the choristers switching on the Christmas tree lights. And then inside the cathedral, two of the choristers are lighting candles to go on the trees inside, and the lantern installation with these paper lanterns are twinkling all down from the massive roof of the cathedral with purple and blue lights all around them. And finally, the illumination of the cathedral building and the grounds from a great distance, all glowing in purple and blue.
And the second headline is Vision for Future of City's Barracks. Housing, community facilities, employment space and even a park and ride could form part of the major redevelopment of Winchester's Army training camp. After years of discussion and ideas mooted, a vision for the future of Sir John Moore Barracks has been revealed this week. In 2016, the Ministry of Defence, the MOD, announced that the base would close in December 2021, but it was given a temporary reprieve in 2019, and the site will be vacated on a phased basis between 2022 and 2024. Since the announcement, there have been hopes that the land could become a science park and calls for a new hospital to be built on the site, along with housing. Now, the Defence Infrastructure Organisation, the DIO, part of the MOD, has published its vision for the barracks off of Andover Road. The project is in the initial stages of the master plan design process, but it has highlighted that a mixed development is planned. A variety of housing has been proposed, including apartments and specialist elderly accommodation, along with a neighbourhood centre which could include community and sport and leisure facilities. Part of the site has also been earmarked for employment and commercial use, with the potential for a park and ride also being explored. The barracks' existing channel and leisure look set to be retained. That's the chapel, by the way. The DIO are currently in talks with Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council about the emerging proposals. Councillor Kelsey Lerney, the City Council's Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, said, "I'll be sorry to see the Army Training Regiment leave Winchester after being part of our local community for so many years. Residents are in the main realistic about brownfield land being developed and want to work with a Defence Infrastructure Organisation to ensure any development fits unobtrusively into the local landscape, preserving the separation of Littleton from Winchester. Any significant development raises concerns about the pressure on services and transport links, and I'm pleased the plan emphasises sustainability and low traffic generation. The potential for greater public access to open space and sports facilities is also to be welcomed. Site surveys were carried out earlier this year, and now an initial consultation has been launched before a revision of the concept master plan is likely to take place next year. A planning application is then expected to be submitted by summer 2021, with work beginning in mid to late 2022, if planning permission is granted. The first public meeting will take place virtually next Wednesday, December the 16th, at 7 p.m, where the emerging master plan will be presented. An MOD spokesperson said, "The Defence Infrastructure Organisation is delighted to start the initial phase of consultation with local residents on the master plan vision for the Sir John Moore Barracks site. We're really keen to hear what the community feels are the main opportunities for the site and the site's association with the adjacent parishes of Littleton and Hairstock. While we would normally run this consultation in a local community centre or village hall, we hope that as many people as possible will be able to access and view the plans virtually on the web-based portal, and we will be available online to answer any questions or queries as they are raised. For more information or to sign up for the virtual consultation event, go to avison-young-folion.com/John-Moore-Barracks. That's avison-young.folion.com/John-Moore-Barracks.
And here we have the third headline, which is Camp for Asylum Seekers Proposed. Plans to develop a short-term facility for up to 500 asylum seekers in Barton Stacey, close to the A303, have come under fire. The Home Office is proposing to use Ministry of Defence land on the edge of the village to accommodate primarily young men who have come into the UK on boats from the continent, staying in porter cabins while they wait for their applications to be processed. A decision is expected to be made in the next few weeks. Council leader Phil North said, "I completely understand the argument about disincentivising dangerous channel crossings facilitated by criminal gangs of people smugglers, but whether you think this country should house more asylum seekers or not, putting these individuals up in temporary buildings akin to an open prison is the wrong accommodation in the wrong location. Apart from some dining and basic recreation facilities, there will be absolutely nothing for them to do. There are few places I would consider less appropriate for a facility of this nature. With no substantial facilities in the vicinity, occupants of the camp will almost certainly want to access the A303 road services on foot. This represents a significant highway danger in them walking on land adjacent to the road and in the carriageway itself. In my view, this is unacceptably dangerous to both the travelling public and the asylum seekers themselves, many of whom will no doubt be tempted to walk to Andover to use the facilities in the town. Again, it is almost certain they will seek to use the most direct route, which is the A303 itself. I would also suggest that with poor accommodation and easy access to the road network, many of them will abscond anyway and slip into the black economy. An influx of 500 young men in a village with an existing population of just 1,000 would have an overwhelmingly detrimental impact. In other similar facilities, this has led to an increase in antisocial behaviour and criminality. Councillor North said that a letter has already been written to Immigration Minister Chris Philip, setting out the arguments against the proposal. He added, "I have no doubt that local residents will be hugely concerned, and I wish to reassure them that they will have my full support in fighting this." Councillor North, alongside former Immigration Minister Caroline Noakes, have launched a petition calling on the Home Office to abandon their plans. A Home Office spokesperson said, "We plan to fix our broken asylum system to make it firm and fair, compassionate to those who are fleeing oppression, persecution and tyranny, but tough on those who abuse our system. Given pressure on the system during these unprecedented times, we have worked tirelessly with local authorities and other partners to provide asylum seekers who would otherwise be destitute with suitable accommodation, as we are required to do by law. Following a review of available government property, the MOD offered temporary use of some of its sites. This includes Barton Stacey, and we are engaging with leaders and officials of Test Valley and Hampshire councils, local MPs and the police and health services, among others, as we continue to explore this as an option." And this is accompanied by a very pretty little photograph of the church in the tiny village of Barton Stacey, but also five asylum seekers. And the council say that many of those who will be at the camp have come into the UK on boats from the continent. These young men are wrapped in plastic and they have got gloves and masks, but they're sitting in one of the inflatable boats looking as very downhearted and miserable.
And that concludes our headline stories. Now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, most read stories, question and answer my Winchester, first person, letter from the Dean, editorial comment and Bogarum diary, and we'll end with items of general news. And I'll start with the death notices. Adam, Delia Ruth Adam, peacefully but suddenly at home. Breslin, John William Breslin, aged 90. Busher, Georgina Mary Calvert, née Peyton Busher, of Thickets House, Bishop's Waltham, peacefully aged 92. Edmonds, Pepita Lynn, known as Lynn Edmonds, of Oglander Road, Winchester, aged 63. Howells, Adrian John Howells, peacefully at home, surrounded by his family. Macklin, Jean Helen Macklin, peacefully aged 92. Marchant, Dennis Peter Den Marchant, peacefully. Nichols, Ian Charles Desbro Nichols, peacefully in hospital after a short illness, aged 78. Nutley, June Mrs. Fish Nutley, aged 84 after a short illness. Randall, Janet née Doncom Randall, at the Royal County Hospital. And finally, Williams, Richard Williams of Alsford. And that was the last one. And now it's time for Christian comment, Jane.
And Christian comment this week is, who exactly were the three wise men? At first glance, Jesus' foreign visitors, as told in Matthew's Gospel, don't look like the kind of people to bring expensive gifts to an ordinary Jewish child. They seem to play a key role in the Christian story, but it's not clear exactly who these men are. Traditionally referred to as kings, the original Greek calls them magi, Eastern astrologers, or maybe prophets. Whoever they were, they travelled a great distance to pay their respects to Jesus, and the gifts they presented showed a remarkable insight into the significance of his birth. The story is celebrated in the well-known carol, of course, We Three Kings of Orient Are, composed in 1857 by John Henry Hopkins for a New York Christian pageant. And the middle verses are sung by three separate soloists, each one explaining how their gift relates to the future saviour. Gold for a king, incense for a deity, and myrrh, a bitter perfume for the dead. It's all summed up in the last verse, the powerful line, King and God and sacrifice. Whoever these men were, they certainly weren't local. Aside from practising astrology, they were clearly unaware of the reputation of the paranoid and power-crazed King Herod. Following their instincts, they crossed huge religious and cultural boundaries to be among Jesus' first recorded worshippers. The Magi remind us that the church was designed to be multicultural and multi-ethnic from the beginning. There are plenty of people today who are drawn towards Jesus, but for many reasons feel that they just don't fit in around the church. That is a great shame, because Jesus made it very clear through his life and teaching that everyone was welcome. If you have experience of church not being very friendly or welcoming, then I want to apologise. We don't always get it right and we're sorry. The good news is that Jesus has always been on the side of those who feel that they don't fit in. So this Christmas, whoever you are and wherever you're from, the invitation is still there to come and worship him. Don't worry about bringing gifts. Just bring yourself. We three kings of Orient are, bearing gifts we traverse afar, field and fountain, moor and mountain, following yonder star. Oh, star of wonder, star of night, star with royal beauty bright, westward leading, still proceeding, guide us to thy perfect light. Born a king on Bethlehem's plain, gold I bring to crown him again, king forever, ceasing never, over us all to reign. Frankincense to offer have I, incense owns a deity nigh, prayer and praising, all men raising, worship him, God on high. Myrrh is mine, its bitter perfume breathes a life of gathering gloom, sorrowing, sighing, bleeding, dying, sealed in the stone-cold tomb. Glorious now, behold him arise, King and God and sacrifice. Alleluia, alleluia, peals through the earth and skies. And that was written by John Henry Hopkins, Jr., public domain. And the article was from Nigel Henning, senior pastor, the Winchester Vineyard.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or the written address is the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. And there are... how many? Oh, yes. There are 11 letters this week, and I'll start with one, and it's called Sins of Fathers. Sir, I was appalled to learn that Ted Hughes, the poet, has been added to the British Library's slavery report for having an ancestor 300 years before his birth. I discovered that my wife is a direct relation of King Henry VIII through Mary Boleyn, who was his mistress. In my father's family is the Glasgow martyr John Mayne, who carried the Covenanters' flag at the Battle of Bothwell Bridge, and was captured and executed in 1684. Also, the Reverend Thomas Mayne, who was moderator of the Free Church of Scotland in 1880. I hope that having these two ancestors in the family might atone for also having King Henry VIII, as he was a serial killer. And that was from Dr. Tony Saunders, Main Road, Otterbourne.
And this letter from Karen McCleary is headed Political Failure. Sir, Jackie Porter in the latest Liberal Democrat flyer, otherwise known as the Worthies Focus, writing about the Tesco Junction traffic congestion nightmare, said, "We stand by our commitment to find a solution to this increasingly busy junction. My neighbours and I would like more than political rhetoric. The solutions are there for the taking and have been since well before COVID and lockdown produced the excuses for inaction. Traffic flow and congestion will be improved by removing the grass verges and putting in a parking bay on Hookpit Farm Lane so that traffic can flow unobstructed both ways. Parking restrictions, yellow lines, on the Springvale Road and Hookpit Lane conjunction to prevent people leaving their cars while they nip into Tesco's would help, and possibly moving the bus stop further away from the junction would also certainly make the area safer. What is needed is political action and financing, not weaselly words and Liberal Democrat hand-wringing. The Conservatives, who also promised action, notably Caroline Horrell at a public meeting 2 years ago, are no better. I wonder, as the local elections planned for next spring come closer and local politicians seek votes, what the political promises will be then." And that was from Karen McCleary, Hookpit Farm Lane, Kingsworthy.
And this letter is called Wrong Place. "Sir, much as it is so nice to see a Christmas tree in Winchester High Street, in this time of crucial social distancing, what a stupid place to put a Christmas tree. This part of the High Street is now much narrower for people to pass by safely. Passers-by now have only two much narrower places to pass by either side of the tree. This obviously increases the risk of spreading the virus. The Christmas tree should have been positioned at the entrance of one of the nearby alleys. There are loads of alleys near that part of the High Street which are rarely used. The tree would still be very visible to all passers-by, and that part of the High Street could then return to being much wider and therefore much more safer. Also, with the tree positioned at the side of this part of the High Street, carol singers and Christmas brass bands could also position themselves near this visible part of the tree, and also to the side of the High Street, and the wider part of this part of the High Street would still remain. Merry Christmas to one and all." And that was from Paul Hickey, Parchment Street, Winchester.
And James Miller writes, "A new bus station. Sir, the attractiveness of bus travel in Winchester has always been undermined by the poor state of the terminus. Successive administrations have promised that this will be corrected in the Silver Hill development, and yet a new bus station is now considered only as a medium-term option. Instead, the council is proposing on-street bus stop provision. Essentially, this means 12 pretty bus stops located around the city. Winchester City Council have completely dismissed the fact that the lack of a bus station was one of the key reasons the public objected to the 2009 scheme and the reason why it formed a core part of the 2018 supplementary planning document. On-street only bus stop provision is a complete cop-out. It means long and potentially confusing walks when interchanging. There will be no safe weatherproof environment to wait for buses. Also, streets such as Middle Brook will not be traffic-free, so air quality and safety will be compromised significantly. Lastly, the ability to transition to electric buses is likely to be far more complex. The 2017 Winchester Transport Survey showed that shelter and safety were ranked third and fourth in terms of importance. Given that there is no advantage in on-street bus provision, I can only conclude that this decision has been made purely to maximise profit from the development, and certainly not in the best interests of bus users. Transport is the largest contributor to the district's carbon footprint. A shift to active travel and public transport is a key means to addressing this. Alongside cost and reliability, the image of bus travel is the key barrier to increased ridership in Winchester. This can only be changed by investing in a modern, efficient bus network with a safe, integrated terminus. This opportunity must not be lost." And that was from James Miller, Wheatland Close, Badger Farm.
This one's entitled Debenhams. "Sir, So, Debenhams have gone into liquidation, chronicled December the 3rd. I'm not at all surprised, but I do have memories of this store when it privately traded under the name of Sheriff and Ward. I'm going back now to 80 years ago, when as a boy at this time of year, my mother took me to meet Santa Claus in his grotto, which was generally positioned on the ground floor. He was a bit scary, but also always gave me a small present. The cash flow system fascinated me. The shop assistant took your money for the items purchased, pushed the cash and account into a container, which was then sucked underground and popped up into the cashier's office. On the return journey, the container with change and receipt popped up into a tray on the counter, sometimes missing it and landing on the floor. Quite amusing to a 10-year-old. And that was from Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
And Christopher O'Neill writes, "To the slaughter. Sir, Amnesty International have published a report, As If Expendable, which in our view could alternatively be called Slaughter of the Innocents. It tells of what happened to residents and staff in English care homes between March the 2nd and June the 12th, 2020, with specific references to Hampshire. The report's conclusion is that the human rights of staff and residents in care homes have been ignored and violated. This includes the right to life and health, together with the right to non-discrimination by age. Recorded deaths from the virus of care home residents during this period were 18,562. 13,844 of the deaths occurred in care homes, the remainder in hospitals. It is likely that the total figure of virus-related deaths during the period was higher as compared to previous years. The government official for National Statistics issued information on November the 27th that excess winter deaths 2019 to 2020 were 28,300 in England and Wales, mostly pensioners, due to cold-related illnesses. This figure excluded deaths registered from COVID-19. Amnesty International state that amongst many matters of concern are many discharges from hospital to care homes occurred of patients either infected of or possibly with the virus. Care home staff were advised that protective clothing was not required unless either they or the residents were symptomatic, although knowledge of asymptomatic infection became known. Insufficient PPE equipment was available, and efforts to source material were met by the response that the NHS had already secured everything available. A failure to ensure regular testing of care home workers and residents. Do not attempt to resuscitate orders have been imposed on some residents without reference to them or their families. And failure to assess care homes' ability to cope with and isolate infected residents. We join Amnesty in calling for the immediate information of a public inquiry to further investigate and identify those responsible for the many failures involved in dealing with the pandemic, resulting in the deaths of many elderly people. We invite you to support this action by contacting your local elected representative." And that was from Christopher O'Neill, Chairman, Hampshire Unison Retired Members Section, Monarch Way, Winchester.
This letter is titled, "A Sham? Sir, I write to express my concern, shared by many other residents, over the City Council's consultation on its proposals for the regeneration of Central Winchester. In 2017, a consultation was conducted by JTP Architects, and a larger number of people of all ages and backgrounds responded than they had ever experienced anywhere else. They produced a supplementary planning document that received wide support from individuals and businesses, and the council adopted it. But before it could be actioned, the political colour of the council administration changed. The new council decided to reinvent the wheel and appointed different consultants to come up with a new plan, the one on which they are currently consulting. At about the same time, the Town Forum commissioned a third set of consultants to involve the community in creating a vision for Winchester. This was presented to the Town Forum on December the 1st to acclaim from both Lib Dem and Conservative members. That was in the Chronicle, December the 3rd. There are some good ideas in the Council's current proposals, but several of the most enthusiastically supported ideas that came up in the JTP consultation are changed, watered down, or completely unmentioned. For example, keeping buses and coaches out of the regeneration area, establishing pedestrian and bicycle routes through it, opening up the buried waterways, converting and extending the Wood Staplers Hall into a museum of the Saxon Age, and building a music performance space that could also accommodate conferences during the day. Similarly ignored are the ideas from the Vision for Winchester Exercise, such as an art corridor designed to appeal to young people, running from the new sports pavilion in North Walls Rec through the School of Art along Middlebrook Street and across the regeneration site to the Broadway. And the methodology of the council's current consultation is seriously flawed, with a built-in bias apparently designed to show more support for the plan than there actually is. For example, the feedback link from the council's online exhibition does not allow people to ask the questions to which they want answers. Instead, it takes them to a multiple-choice questionnaire. As Joanna Lewis said in her excellent column in last week's Chronicle, "This consultation raises concerns that it is a sham." And that was by Tim Fell of Berwick Avenue, Winchester.
And here Mark Rowe writes, "Many thanks. Sir, I would like to thank all of the people who have helped me and supported me over the years. This includes friends who are like family to me, people from the wider community, from Winchester City Council, Winchester Go, and many others. I can now see a brighter future, a happier future, a future of unknown, but I feel stronger about it when handling it. A future where I will publish online about where I grew up, my football history, enjoying football and beautiful games, plus involving a few twists and turns, running in Winchester City Council elections, and much more. The people of Winchester and District should be proud of themselves for dealing with 2020, a very mixed year. My family and I would like to wish all a happy Christmas and a happy new year for 2021. And that was from Mark Rowe, Taplings Close, Week.
This one's entitled Victorian Heart. "Sir, demolishing any Victorian building saddens my heart. Connaught and Spencer Houses were part of the Winchester heritage, constructed in 1865, the initiative of Sir Walter Crofton. The formerly Carlisle Memorial Refuge served its day, addressing the rehabilitation of women prisoners in preparation for their return to normal life. Rather than demolishing traditional Victorian red brick buildings, a creative and viable solution has been considered. Architects dislike the idea of retaining an outside structure and building a new interior, believing it to be a pretense of reality. The exterior facade could make positive use of modern technology, triple glazing and matching the Victorian style frames which are available. During the early 70s, a classic Victorian building was threatened with demolition in Victoria Square, Birmingham. A strong protest resulted in the facade being preserved and a modern interior constructed. Although the buildings in Romsey Road have been demolished to be replaced by four neo-Georgian townhouses, at least not brutally modern design, the feasibility of maintaining these historical items should have been considered. No wonder Winchester Heritage Open Days is saddened by the loss of such irreplaceable buildings, when a positive and viable solution could have been discussed. Once demolished, they can never be replaced." And that was by Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
And here we have Jez Banks writing, "Railings replaced on rail bridge. Sir, having been a resident of Winchester for only a few years, I'm still discovering many of the fantastic locations around the city. Generally, the architecture around the city centre is something to admire, and it makes living here a privilege. Then, heading back home on Friday, I was amazed to see how Network Rail appear to be revamping the fencing on the Upper High Street Bridge. Though not a standout location or bridge in the city, it did blend in with the local area. The rails, for example, matching other properties such as those which surrounded the nearby St Paul's Church. Well, not now. Whilst I appreciate that safety must be in the forefront of any design, surely erecting a fence that makes the bridge look like the entrance to Winchester Prison, sorry, the prison entrance is actually better looking, is a travesty. I'd love to know who thought the new design would be a like-for-like replacement. It's awful. Please, Network Rail, take a second look and stop it being an eyesore for the next 50 years. And that was from Jez Banks, Stockbridge Road, full flood in Winchester. And the Network Rail statement said, the wire mesh has been installed to prevent people from trespassing onto the railway. And this is accompanied by a picture of the railway bridge, which is the bridge between the Upper High Street and St Paul's Hill. And it has a brick wall, but now in front of and on top of the brick wall is a very thin, narrow mesh attached between metal green uprights. Safety, yes, but it is quite unattractive.
And that was the last letter to the editor. Thank you to all of the contributors. Now, we can't do your say at the moment because the social distancing makes it very difficult to do. So instead, we're doing most read stories from our website over the last week. Number one, three areas of Winchester see a rise in COVID cases with latest data reveals. Number two, snow forecast to hit later this week as temperatures plunge. Oh, crikey. Three, planners reluctantly approve garage in Alsford built in the wrong place. Four, one of the Winchester's grandest houses sold to hotel owner for an eight-figure sum. Five, demolition of piece of city's Victorian social history. I think we've mentioned that earlier on, actually. Number six, hundreds of pubs in Hampshire could be forced to close over Christmas. Number seven, tree blocking light into home must be protected despite it being too big. Number eight, take a look around the new leisure centre as it nears completion. Number nine, persistent Winchester shoplifter finally jailed by magistrates. And number 10, victim's family criticised lack of police action after arson attack close to flats in Winchester. And now Jane's got a question and answer my Winchester, I think.
And this week it is Tamandra Nichols, 73, retired of Step Terrace, Winchester, who tells us what she thinks of the city. What is your favourite restaurant or cafe? Well, what I miss the most is a really good flat white and coffee lab. What is your favourite pub or bar? Well, St James's Tavern is my local, and it is an intimate and friendly place with a good range of beers, wine and pub food. What is your favourite shop? This would have to be a bookshop, so P&G Wells on College Street. I love the fact that they still have a bindery. What is your favourite building? The Hospital of St Cross, the chapel and almshouses. I've been to concerts and a funeral in the chapel. What is your favourite view? I don't think I could name a favourite view. During lockdown, I would take off from my house every day in different directions. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? Well, it has to be our magnificent cathedral. And what is Winchester's best kept secret? Probably evidence of William the Conqueror's palace in shops in the town. What is the best thing about Winchester? It is a small, compact city you can walk across easily. And the worst? The design of the new builds. If there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would that be? Encourage more independent shops to help make the centre a more vibrant community. Incentives from the council to encourage entrepreneurial activity, perhaps?
Now I'm going to read a coloured Aziz's article called Wrong Place for Solar Farm. When in my salad days, nearly 40 years ago, I first moved to Hampshire, I lived for some months in Weald, a charming village 6 miles to the northeast of Alsford. My drive from the Television South studios in Southampton, where I worked, changed dramatically once through Alsford, as the land transformed itself into the folds of unsport downland, where nestled often substantial but always elegant houses, surrounded by parkland, resplendent with ancient oaks. Before arriving, I'd been told that Hampshire was God's own country, and this particular haven is even more godly than the rest. So not surprisingly, they named it God's Field. Monks established themselves there in the 14th century, and there still exists a chapel. Grade 1, listed, it's a national monument. Those monks were made of stern stuff, turning out for lords at dawn to kneel in such a bone-chilling building. But it's a much worthy building, so much so that the authorities, including Hampshire County Council, have granted considerable sums for remedial repairs. The chapel is just a short detour from what is known as the Three Castles Path, which wends its way from Windsor to Winchester, with Odiham providing the third castle en route. It was apparently a favourite of King John for hunting trips. Now, right next to the path, there's a proposal to cover 40 acres of arable farmland with solar panels. Now, I am a big fan of solar panels. I have several on the roofs in my offices, and for the last 8 years, I have smugly warmed myself in their green glow, while at the same time seeing the bank balance benefit greatly. These panels are up high. They merge reasonably successfully with the black slates of the Victorian roof, and frankly, are not too much of an eyesore. Not so for the proposed scheme at God's Field. From the path adjoining the proposed site, you have an uninterrupted view all the way to Cheesfoot Head, 10 miles to the south and one of the highest points in the county. If the panels are given the green light, the first half mile will be a sea of shining black. Of course, you cannot blame the landowner for trying. There are firms dedicated to the creation of solar farms. They pitch up and the deal is simple. They'll do everything risk-free, and if planning is granted, you are looking at £750 to £1,000 an acre for the next 40 years, several times what the land could earn by growing things. It's a tempting offer. Naturally, the locals are up in arms, but this is more than just NIMBYism. These ancient byways, dotted with historical buildings, are part of the warp and weft of our country. Although solar panels have been a great help in reducing our carbon footprint, they don't match wind power. And as technology develops, there are already signs that they'll be superseded by other means of generating clean energy which are less obtrusive, particularly hydrogen-based generation. 40 years is a long time to blight beautiful pieces of countryside. In the end, it's all about scale and proportionality. The Barton Stacey incinerator was seen off. Before that, the Candover Valley Wind Farm and the Mitchell Devastation New Town, although the new landowners are now having another crack. No one ever put a statue up to a planner, but they have a thankless task. There is a multitude of solar schemes springing up in Hampshire, all jumping on the eco bandwagon. They will have to decide between various applications. Let's hope God's Field can remain just that, God's Field.
And the message from the Dean. This Advent has seen the very happy and welcome return to the congregational worship in the cathedral, with the return of the full choir for the first time since March. The pandemic has caused us all to experience loss in some way during the last year. Some have experienced loss upon loss. The recovery of live choral music is a great joy. Perhaps it can herald for us the hope of recovering much more than that has been put aside, postponed or lost during this past year. Perhaps it can also help us to a deeper appreciation of the blessings that we enjoy and often take for granted. Some people are now able to plan a family Christmas, though within a 3-household limit. However, it is also the case that many of us are not able to take journeys to see loved ones and that friends and family are still not able to visit us. Christmas for many of us will be very quiet this year. The cathedral is joining with the wider Church of England in seeking to offer our communities comfort and joy this year. The cathedral is hosting not just worship with lovely music, but also, new for this year, along with beautiful Christmas trees, a delicate and moving lantern installation by artist Jill Sacchini. One of the familiar and joyful things I find myself particularly longing to see again is the cathedral nativity scene, the work of sculptor Peter Eugene Ball. The Nativity is created from salvaged wood, embellished with burnished, studded metal and gilding. In particular, I long to see the feet of the wise man kneeling before Christ. The artist has chosen to gild the upturned bare soles of his feet in gold. In reality, the traveller's bare feet would have been dusty and dirty from his journey, but the artist shows us that this journey has been a glorious one following a star. He has journeyed mile after mile in order to find God. Whatever your circumstances, whether or not you are able to make the physical journeys this Christmas, please continue to turn towards Christ and journey inwardly to his nativity. Open your heart and mind to his advent and to the recovery and new life that brings us all. The journey of Advent is a journey into hope. While the world is dark and cold, we look forward to certain hope of light in the darkness. The birth of God among us, Emmanuel, is our hope for a better world because this child brings justice, mercy and healing. Do please stay in touch and let us know if you have a prayer request. We continue the daily reflections and a daily musical Advent calendar online. I also hope that you were enjoying the virtual Christmas market. With blessings and best wishes, the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester.
The editorial comment this week follows one of the headline stories, and it's Future of Barracks Needs Thought. In 2016, the Ministry of Defence announced that it would close Sir John Moore Barracks in 2021. But it was given a temporary reprieve and the military will now vacate the site by 2024. Talks have been held and ideas mooted about the future of the base, but nothing concrete has been decided. But finally, this week, 4 years after the initial announcement, a glimpse of what the barracks could look like has been revealed. A mixture of housing, community facilities, commercial units, and even a park and ride could be built on the site under the MOD's master plan vision. The people of Winchester now have the opportunity to have their say on the plans with a virtual consultation event next week where the design team will explain the plan. We hope that those behind the scheme will really listen to what residents and interested parties have to say. It's no good building a development if it's not needed, so please will project leaders take note as we are sure plenty of people will want to get their views across before any planning application is submitted. Jane's got an alternative view of the news, I think.
With Belgarum. Two little items today. The first, sign of hope or bat signal. The University of Winchester thanked its staff, students and the wider community and the NHS by hosting a Beacon of Hope event last Wednesday. The display marked the end of the current national lockdown period and along with the start of the transition period to help students return home safely in line with the government's approach to controlling the spread of COVID-19. Two single beams of light shone from the university's King Alfred and West Downs quarters. The university's Vice-Chancellor, Professor Joy Carter, CBEDL, said, "This display is one of the ways we are sharing our gratitude, firstly to our staff and students, to thank them for their strength, hard work and compassion during these extraordinary times. We are also endlessly grateful for the support of the wider community, the NHS and all key workers in helping us with university life. COVID-19 has had a huge impact on so many people across Winchester and the surrounding areas, and through these beacons, we also remember those who have lost loved ones and those who have been ill during this time." Following the event, many took to Facebook to question what was taking place, with the many joking that it looked like the bat signal from Batman. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the university with a huge Christmas tree and a white circle of light around the top of the round circular building there, but also a blue light shooting up from the top of the Christmas tree and the green lit building, which presumably is the potential bat signal. And the second article is Two Ronnies Honoured by Shop. So,
It's good night from me.
A chic Christmas boutique called Four Candles, in reference to the Two Ronnies sketch, that's the Four Candles sketch, has popped up in Shawford. It will be there until the new year, selling a range of Christmas gifts, with Alison Witherman running it. She said, with no Christmas market this year, we wanted to open somewhere for people to go to browse, which could be combined with a day out, as Shawford is only a 40-minute brisk winter stroll from Winchester along the river, or, for the less active, a 4-minute train journey from Winchester Station. Four Candles does sell a range of handmade candles, but also much more, with individual Christmas crafts and artworks for sale, which you won't find on the High Street. Whether it's Christmas cards with scenes of the Itchen, willow reindeer, beautiful wreaths, stained glass Christmas decorations, mosaic mirrors, studio pottery, outdoor Christmas trees made from pallets, or various priced local artists' paintings and prints, there is something for everyone and all budgets. The stall also has retro games, bespoke baby clothes and baby products from Cotapilla, which is based in Shawford. Hot chocolate or mulled wine is available from the shop. Ms. Witherman added, we can make the journey home, or you can stay longer and book a table for lunch at the Bridge Pub opposite the shop. A thoroughly lovely and welcome Christmas time is to be had by all. And there is a photograph of the inside of the shop glowing with warmth and lots of different items to sell, from wreaths and candles, four candles, no four candles, I don't think, and heart-shaped hangings and baby clothes and jars of something delicious, and looks a very welcome visit.
Lighting Up time ends on Friday the 11th of December at 7:58 a.m. and it begins at 3:58 p.m. On Wednesday the 16th of December, it ends at 8:03 a.m. and begins at 3:58 p.m. And now we'll go on to items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Jane.
And I thought it was appropriate to have the COVID vaccine rollout begins. Vulnerable Hampshire residents this week began the start of the biggest immunisation programme in history. On Tuesday, the NHS started to vaccinate patients against coronavirus at dozens of hospital hubs. People aged 80 and over, as well as care home workers, are the first to receive the jab, along with the NHS workers who are at higher risk. Hampshire First Local Hub is located at Portsmouth University Hospitals Trust, one of the first 50 hubs to be rolled out during the first wave. More hospitals will start vaccinating over the next coming weeks and months. GPs and other primary care staff are also being put on standby to start delivering the jab. World War II veteran Michael Tibbs was the first patient to use Hampshire's vaccine hub at Portsmouth's Queen Alexandra Hospital on Tuesday morning. The former Royal Navy man was one of a number of people aged 80 and over who were first to receive the jab. Michael of Lynchmere said, well, I didn't know what to expect, but it's absolutely wonderful and I feel really fortunate to have the vaccination. Michael was accompanied by his son Philip and was applauded by staff after receiving his vaccination. He added, during lockdown I've been confined to the garden. However, when things get back to normal, I'm really looking forward to seeing my children and great-grandchildren. The vaccine will make a difference to everybody, and we are so fortunate to have the NHS. NHS officials have issued advice to those in Hampshire who are worried about the rollout of the new coronavirus vaccine. The NHS has confirmed that those aged 80 and over, care home workers and some NHS staff will be the first to receive the vaccine. These people will be contacted by their GP or the NHS via letter, which will include all of the information they need, such as the address of their local vaccination hub and their NHS number. They said that although people are eager to receive the vaccine, people should avoid contacting the NHS about them when they can have the jab. The NHS explained that they're moving fast to ensure that GPs, care homes and other hub can start administering the vaccine, but said that the programme is a marathon, not a sprint. This is because the vaccine is complex to transport and store. It needs to be stored at minus 70 degrees before being thawed out and can only be moved four times within that cold chain before being used. The life-saving vaccine is typically delivered by a simple injection in the shoulder, but there is a complex and difficult logistical challenge to deliver from the manufacturer's Pfizer to patients. NHS staff have been working over the weekend to prepare the sites and accept deliveries. Professor Stephen Powis, NHS National Medical Director, said, "The NHS has a strong record of delivering large-scale vaccination programmes from the flu jab, HPV vaccine and life-saving MMR jabs. Hard-working staff will once again rise to the challenge to protect the most vulnerable people from this awful disease." And there is a photograph of Michael Tibbs, who was the first to use the Hampshire's vaccine hub, and he's leaving the hospital with his walking frame and his mask on, and the staff looking very happy and cheering him on his way out.
And following that, a Sutton Scotney hospice has put itself forward to be on the front line of the COVID vaccine rollout. Naomi House and Jack's Place, which provide specialist hospices for children and young adults, has submitted plans to government detailing the support the charity could provide in a future vaccination programme. So that's all quite good news as well. And over to you, Jay.
And Christmas arrives at the cathedral. The installation of the huge Christmas tree heralded the arrival of the festive season as Winchester Cathedral announces a new location for the Christmas market. While COVID-19 has meant the Christmas market cannot go ahead in its usual form, the cathedral has moved the event online. The new Christmas market website, launched on November 22nd, enables people to shop with the independent retailers, producers and charities who would normally be within the cathedral grounds. The festive website brings together everything Christmas at the cathedral building, including details of services, events and activities happening both in the cathedral and online. Visitors to the website can find out how to take part in a community art installation, how to enter a Christmas poetry competition, to learn about the history of Christmas at the cathedral, to get craft ideas, or simply take time out with a daily Advent reflection. There is even a Christmas Carols Advent calendar sung by the Winchester Cathedral Choir. The Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester, said, "We recognise it has been a tough year for many and we want to do everything possible to bring comfort and joy to all this festive season. The pandemic has prevented many activities, so we're delighted to offer new ways to engage online, meaning everyone can join in wherever they are. We're also pleased to continue cherished services and activities in the cathedral, including the giant tree in the nave. The 25-foot Christmas tree, which is always funded by the Friends of Winchester Cathedral, has been installed. The heavy lifting began when the cathedral staff set about bringing the massive tree inside the building and installing it beneath the Great West Window. This year, there will also be four extra trees to discover in the cathedral, including a tree of hope." And this is accompanied by a photograph of a huge crane hoiking up this massive tree before somehow getting it through the cathedral doors and inside the cathedral.
Well-being works of art. A specially commissioned series of sculptures will be unveiled at Winchester's new Sport and Leisure Park. The City Council has partnered with charity The Pinder Trust, which will fund the works of art, set to be located outside a state-of-art hydrotherapy suite. The three figures are being sculpted by Michelle Castles, who has spent 20 years observing the human form and created works for other leisure facilities across the country. Located within the courtyard, overlooking the suite, the sculptures will be made with wire mesh and will reflect the initial feeling of restriction and how the bodies can be gradually released from pain. Angus Sladen, chair of the Pinder Trust, said, "It's really important that users of Winchester's new hydrotherapy suite truly experience the range of benefits it can bring, which include a relaxing environment and supporting overall well-being. The adjoining courtyard provides a fantastic space in which people can enjoy looking out at while benefiting from hydrotherapy. So we're delighted to have Michelle provide us with a bespoke piece that truly demonstrates how our suite can support personal and physical development and well-being. There is often a great sense of achievement and independence gained from hydrotherapy, and we believe Michelle's sculptures demonstrate this perfectly. It's expected that the new sports and leisure park will open in spring next year.
And now we have carols on the doorstep this Christmas. People across the country will be on their doorsteps singing next week, and Winchester Radio will be providing a backing track to local residents. At 5:30pm on Sunday, December the 20th, the 94.7 FM station will play a Christmas soundtrack for residents to sing along to. Presenters are hoping everyone in the district will join in Carols on the Doorstep. Anna O'Brien, chairman of Winchester Radio, said, "We love hearing from our listeners, and 2020 has shown just how important human connection is to all of us. Our volunteers have worked tirelessly to help people feel socially connected and up to date with support information throughout the pandemic, and we know how much people have struggled with not being able to see family and friends this year. It is fantastic that listeners from the Chat Tea Cafe have suggested Winchester Radio bring people together in Christmas spirit through Carols on the Doorstep. We want as many people as possible to join in and help share some Christmas joy. Tune in locally on the radio at 94.7 FM, online at Winchester Radio or via the UK Radio Player app. Patients and NHS staff in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital can also tune in through the bedside Hospedia units around the wards. Chat Tea Cafe in normal times would run activities each month in Badger Farm Community Centre in Winchester."
Streets Winter Wonderland. They're finished. The wooden Christmas trees in Westman Road have been painted, erected and lit up. And now the road is looking more festive than ever before. As previously reported, the Week residents made their own Winter Wonderland using their front gardens. And those who live at the Berwick Avenue end of Westman Road began work on November the 21st. Claire Nichols told the Chronicle, "This is to bring a bit of festive cheer to those who pass by." The idea started with five households who used to bring a glass of wine out to the front of their houses and clap for key workers every Thursday. "We had a socially distanced VE day, tea party with food, music and decorated tables and outfits, and the idea is now spreading down the road. Neighbours had been outside the front of their houses with tools, paintbrushes, festive jumpers, music and mayhem to create their very own winter wonderland."
And now Railway hosts Magical Illumination Show. The world's first LED train has started taking passengers as part of a new festive experience. The Steam Illuminations shows have begun on the Mid-Hants Railway Watercress line, offering visitors the chance to see a unique, world-first, pixel-mappable digital LED train between Alresford and Alton. Created in partnership with Purple Lighting Limited, it is a light show on and in a steam train consisting of 13,174 fully controllable colour-mixing LED lights and LED wristbands. The lights are programmed to perform a wonderful light show consisting of different colours and flashing patterns. Everyone is given an LED wristband to wear on the train to be part of the show and can take them home after the event. Popular and traditional music is being played along with the lights to enhance the experience. Speaking before the launch, General Manager Simon Baggett said, "We are delighted to be bringing this unique event to the Watercress line. It's a wonderful experience the whole family can enjoy together and is sure to be an event to remember." A spokesperson for the Watercress line added, "We are so excited to offer such a new experience to our visitors and hope we can provide some Christmas cheer for all the family, especially during these unprecedented times." Journeys will take place between December the 11th and the 23rd, and the 27th and the 31st, and from January the 1st to January the 3rd. The Midhants Railway Limited, famously nicknamed the Watercress Line in the early 20th century for its role in transporting the crop to London, is Hampshire's only standard gauge heritage railway. And this has, of course, two very colourful photos of the Watercress Line, the steam train, with hundreds of little lights sparkling it up all along the edge and over the top, and a very cheerful guard looking out of the window from the well-lit-up train.
Alton School share the joy of Christmas. Alton School prep pupils have taken their Christmas nativity onto another level, determined not to let any COVID restriction get in the way. Pupils from the age of 4 up to 7 years have had lots of fun learning about the nativity and bringing the story to life through their words and song. Joy Bunnessa, Year 2 teacher, said, "Christmas is such a special time for families, and after the year we've all had, we wanted to make sure that families still got the opportunity to enjoy their children taking part in our school nativity. It's always such a wonderful event. We're so proud of all of our pupils and staff who worked together to make this production such a success." As well as their nativity, this year the school's director of music, Mr. Robinson, has produced a celebration of Christmas film in place of their annual carols by Candlelight Service. This is the whole school production celebrating music, drama and the wonder of Christmas. It also features Alton School's talented Year 4 teacher, Miss Woods Davidson, singing "Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas." Carl Guest, headmaster, said, "We are one big family at Alton School, and I'm delighted that we have been able to use technology to bring some Christmas sparkle into our homes. I would like to wish everyone within our school, Alton School family, and our wider community, a safe, peaceful and happy Christmas." And there's a lovely photograph of six young girls, years 1 and 2, angels in a nativity show at Alton School. They've all got tinsel in their hair and great big smiles and beams. It's just lovely.
And here we have the fascinating account of the life of a local community stalwart, Georgie Busher. One of the best-known local politicians in Winchester District has died, aged 92. Ex-Mayor Georgina Busher, who died on November the 24th, will be remembered by everyone as a wonderful character, a powerhouse for Bishops Waltham, and a lady who volunteered for everything. Georgie started life in 1928 with a nanny and a governess. When she was only 6 years old, her father died, but she cheerfully adapted from running wild in the Lancashire countryside to the civilised pleasures of London museums and zoo visits with her grandfather. Georgie was packed off to boarding school by her mother, 14 schools in all, the last St Catherine's at Bramley. During the Second World War, she was sent round to various relatives in safe locations. She gave out cigarettes and chocolates to Dunkirk survivors at Bournemouth. She was strafed on the Witterings marshes and lived in a large white house used by the Luftwaffe to position themselves for bomb runs on Liverpool. This she discovered on meeting a former pilot at Hanover Art School when her stepfather worked with the Army of Occupation post-war. At 18, Georgie was expected to make a good marriage, which blocked university or career prospects. So, in 1960, when she and her husband arrived in Bishops Waltham with their young sons, Georgie was already involved in girl guiding and the Women's Institute, the first of many local voluntary organisations she would lead over the next 60 years. These included St John's Ambulance, the Community Care Group, Bishops Waltham Museum and Citizens Advice, as well as her long-lasting commitment to St Peter's Church. Of her service to Winchester Cathedral, Sarah Williams, volunteer coordinator, said, "Georgina, a much-valued volunteer for many years and devout member of the community, she will be sadly missed." Georgie even found time to breed chinchillas and was a long-standing national judge for the National Chinchilla Society and served as their president for over 10 years. In the 1960s, when local authorities got terribly keen on knocking things down, Georgie stood as a Conservative councillor. As a new member on Winchester City Council, she persuaded the planning committee to accept the new GP surgery. She was re-elected as an independent. Her principle was to try very hard to look after people, because people get lost in big organisations. Current City Councillor David McLean commented, "Oh, fiercely independent, a great role model. If anyone needed advice, Georgie was available to help." Georgie's forte was action. "I was chairman of every committee except Health and Works. For some reason, I never felt an affinity with dustbins," she remarked. But as an energetic campaigner for local amenities, Georgie organised a new home for Bishop's Waltham Museum in the Palace grounds. She secured the Priory sports gown purchase from the police authority alongside her great friend Jean Hamilton, and as mayor, insisted the Environment Agency provide a new flood relief outlet from the South Pond. Unfortunately, Georgie was widowed while her four sons were very young. She told us that her proudest moment as mayor in 2000 was taking the salute of her late husband's regiment at the Millennial Parade through Winchester's High Street. And this has a photograph of the Winchester mayor, Georgina Busher, in her full mayoral outfit, obviously greatly revered and remembered by all.
Chesil's show is delayed 3 weeks. A family bereavement forced Chesil Theatre to postpone their broadcast production, Two, by Jim Cartwright, from last Saturday to Sunday, December the 27th. This follows an earlier rescheduling in line with government guidance, but Winchester's leading amateur theatre company is determined the show will go on eventually. Chairman David Small said, "We're aware this is a great disappointment for everyone who has been looking forward to our first streaming project, Chesil Theatre at Home. The cast and crew have worked hard through many difficulties, and we're sure their patience will be rewarded at this later date. We realise this might not be convenient for everyone who is already booked, and inquiries for refunds can be made to tickets@chesiltheatre.org.uk. Chesil Theatre, also known as Winchester Dramatic Society, presents six main productions a year, ranging from comedy to classics, from its theatre on Chesil Street. It also runs drama workshops and readings, plus two lively youth theatre groups, as well as offering stagecraft and technical training. The company has been performing for over 150 years.
And now homeless benefited from COVID. The COVID crisis in the spring did result in almost ending homelessness in the city. City councillors heard that most of the rough sleeters were brought into accommodation in the Everyone In initiative. As reported previously, the council took over a former A2 Dominion supported housing project on City Road to provide 10 beds. The lease has been extended to March after a £46,000 grant was secured from the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government. It helped take the strain after social distancing rules meant that the night shelter on Jury Street had to stop having shared bedrooms, reducing its capacity from 17 to 10. Additional beds were also provided at the Mercure Wessex Hotel. Charlotte Quinn, Housing Options Manager, said out of 33 homeless people, 29 were moved into temporary accommodation, while some opted to stay rough sleeping and one was back in prison. They were provided with two meals a day, medicine and support to stay at home, such as TV, DVDs, microwave and mobile phones. Other families were housed because social distancing meant they could not stay in their current households.
New approach to flood defences. Civic chiefs are looking at linking flood defences across three villages near Winchester. Hampshire County Council is investigating long-term options to improve resilience to flooding and drought in an innovative pilot in Littleton, Headbourne-Worthy and Kingsworthy. Councillor Rob Humby, Deputy Leader and Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, said, "Helping improve communities' resilience to the impact of flooding is critical for the quality of life for many Hampshire residents, but there are rarely simple or straightforward solutions. Since the flooding in the winter of 2014, we've undertaken a number of projects, invested in infrastructure, bid for national funding and worked closely with partners to put in place improvements. In short, we've done what we can, but whilst engineering measures will improve flood resilience, they will not eliminate all risk. In Littleton, Headbourneworthy and Kingsworthy, the County Council has worked with the parish, city and county councillors, the Environmental Agency, Winchester City Council, Defence Infrastructure Organisation, Southern Water, residents and landowners to investigate what measures could be put in place to manage flood risk. With the drainage systems of the three villages interlinked, the County Council has adopted an integrated and catchment-based approach to ensure that the dynamics of the flooding are understood and that measures developed for one area do not lead to flooding elsewhere. Councillor Humby added, "A changing climate is likely to lead to more intense rainfall, more often during the winter, and hotter, drier weather in the summer. So it is vital we take action to help areas which are particularly susceptible to the impact of too much or too little water. Highways drainage alone is not able to deal with the intensity of rainfall we are starting to see now. A broader long-term approach on a landscape scale is needed, inclusive of the whole environment, such as farming methods, land management and water management, and it will require input and collaboration from everyone involved to a much greater degree than ever before. It is time for a complete reset on how we think about how we manage water to establish the environment we need for the future."
And now how pupils' socks help to put spotlight on bullying. Pupils at this Winchester Primary School learned about equality and difference during a recent anti-bullying week. Staff at Stanmore School highlighted the ways of preventing bullying behaviour and taught children how to respond to it. And footwear played a key part in the lessons. Willow class teacher Angela Hawken told the Hampshire Chronicle about the school's events throughout the week. She said, "The pupils at Stanmore Primary School have been taking a part in Anti-Bullying Week through a variety of activities to raise awareness about bullying, highlighting the ways of preventing bullying and responding to it in an effective way. They have thought about what they choose to do to stand up to bullying, and they wore odd socks on Friday to remind them that we are all unique and we should celebrate the difference." And this is accompanied by two photos of five pupils at Stanmore School, all in their yellow T-shirts and their green jackets. And they're all wearing different coloured socks on each foot, some spotty and Father Christmassy and some stripy and some very patterned, but they all have a large beam on their faces.
Pilot turns artist in aid of a charity. A former military helicopter pilot is now using her steady hand to raise money for charity. Anna Shergold has converted the old Edinburgh Woolen Mill shop in Winchester High Street into a gallery. She is using it to sell and exhibit her artwork, which she's been working on since leaving the armed forces in 2018. She has since raised more than £150,000, and her donations have included £50,000 for the UK Invictus Games team, £65,000 for the Born Free Foundation, and in 2020, almost £40,000 for Prince William's conservation charity, Tusk. A spokesperson said, "Hannah's work is created in vivid, brightly coloured oil paints, using only palette knives and a signature method of dragging the paint through itself. Her technique uses abstract shapes and geometric lines to create incredible movement, bringing her wildlife paintings to life with an almost three-dimensional quality. The exhibition is open until Saturday, December the 19th, every day from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. and 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. Entry is free. More information can be found at www.hannahshergold.com or by emailing hannah@hannahshergold.com.
And our peddling pensioners in fundraiser. Cycling pensioners have raised more than £3,000 for mental health charity. For 14 years around the country lanes of the Meon Valley on a Thursday, you may well have come across a group of cyclists in their 60s, 70s and 80s enjoying the countryside. The second lockdown in early November meant group cycling was off the agenda for the next 4 weeks. However, the group decided to turn a negative into a positive. They challenged themselves to cycle 2,000 miles over the four-week period and raise funds for a good cause. Mike Berry, who came up with the idea, said, "We know how important being outside and getting physical exercise is for people of our age, and we also know that this year has been particularly hard on charities, as they have been unable to organise the usual fundraising events that support them." And this is accompanied by a photograph of a very fit-looking group of 11, 60s, 70s and apparently 80s. They don't look 80, I have to say, in their lycra leggings and their high-vis jackets and cycle helmets, all raising the money by cycling for charity.
Cottage to carry Cameron's legacy. Work to restore a cottage in memory of a Winchester teenager is well underway. Cameron's Cottage in the New Forest will reopen as a residential education centre to continue the legacy of Cameron Bespolka. The Winchester College pupil was a keen nature lover before his death in 2013. He was 16 years old and died in an avalanche. Once the renovation work by the RSPB is completed, the cottage will be used to educate people on wildlife. Cameron's mother, Corinne, who also founded the Cameron Bespolka Trust, said, "Cameron was an active young RSPB member, and it is therefore even more special that we are now partnering with RSPB. This partnership has enabled us to work together to create Cameron's Cottage, a place nestled in the middle of RSPB Reserve, Franchises Lodge, where young people can stay and absorb life lessons about wildlife and conservation. It's one small way of giving young people opportunities to experience nature firsthand and encourage them to make our planet a better place, instill a lifelong love of nature, as well as reap the huge benefits that being outside brings." The cottage is in a secluded woodland reserve near No Man's Land, in the north of the New Forest. It's set to become a unique field study centre for schools, colleges, universities and small groups of young people. Guests will be able to take part in nature-based activities. Bats, including some rare species, will reap the benefits of the new woodland residence, with the entire loft and roof of the adjoining classroom being dedicated to them. Species include greater horseshoe bats, pipistrelles and brown long-eared bats will be able to access the property through specialised bat tiles, as well as holes in the cladding. Richard Snelling, the site manager, said, "Cameron's Cottage is off the beaten track and with an incredibly special nature reserve which is home to an array of wildlife. This cottage is unique, not only in its potential to connect young people from all walks of life with nature, but also to create space for wildlife." And there's a photograph of the cottage as it is now, which is in need of some work. It's got a skip next to it. And then there's a plan next to that of what it's going to look like. And there's all young people supposed to be going inside and really enjoying themselves. It looks terrific.
Now Royal Down petition emerges as battle heats. The campaign against plans for a huge housing development south of Winchester is growing. There is now a petition to halt Royal Down in its tracks, which looks to build 5,000 new homes between the city and Hursley. Save South Winchester and Hursley Neighbourhood Plan Group are both calling on the City Council to reject the scheme. So far, they have received 3,132 signatures on their petition. On behalf of the two groups, David Killeen and Hampshire County Councillor Jan Warwick have given a list of reasons as to why they are objecting. They said, "Such a development would detract from an ancient history in Hursley Parish and border immediately onto the historic conservation of Hursley. It would take place in existing settlement gaps and create coalescence of distinct and separate settlements. It would damage beautiful countryside in Compton and Oliver's Battery and destroy the rural views southwest of Winchester from these parishes. It would damage the compact nature of the city of Winchester itself and exacerbate existing ground water flooding in Hursley Village. They added, "We do not need funding from you at this stage, but please share this petition widely, and for more updates, follow the Save South Winchester Facebook page." Royal Down is being proposed by local farmer Nick Russell, who owns Down Farm. As reported in the Chronicle, the scheme has been called Royal Down Garden Village and would see homes, a new access road linking to Badger Farm Road, two primary schools, a secondary school, a health centre, a park and ride, solar farms and land for employment. Mr Russell is already facing opposition from the two groups aforementioned, Winchester MP Steve Brine, Ward Councillor Eleanor Bell, the charity Butterfly Conversation, CPRE Hampshire and other local residents. He has yet to respond to an interview request, and the Chronicle still awaits a conversation with the project lead, James Turner. The petition can be found and signed virtually at change.org. To find it, type in the search bar, Save South Winchester. It will be sent to the City Council when it reaches its 5,000 signature target. And this has a picture of the County Councillor Jan Warwick and David Killeen, Chairman of Hursley Parish Council, standing in front of a very distant area with local fields and hillsides going into the distance, which presumably would all disappear if the Royal Down Garden Village was built.
Lido launches campaign as urgent repairs needed. A fundraising campaign has been launched for urgent repairs to the Winchester Lido. The facade of the 1930s building is deteriorating rapidly, and the charity that owns it has launched an appeal. The Winchester Lido Sports Association has reserves, but is hoping to raise more money to be better prepared for future problems. The Lido was opened in 1934 and included an outdoor swimming pool that thousands of youngsters used until the opening of the River Park Leisure Centre in the 1970s. It is now the car park. The hall is used by local sports clubs, including the badminton, fitness and martial arts, and has been used as a music venue, hosting a pre-fame Rolling Stones in 1963. The crowdfunder appeal online aims to raise £4,000 and has so far reached £670. The page says, "The clubhouse building is now in need of significant repair and refurbishment. The Winchester Lido Sports Association charity is undertaking a series of works that is essential if the building is to remain structurally sound and usable for the coming decades. Work has been done to the roof, flooring and boiler with support from the Sport England and the City Council. The impact of COVID-19 saw the building closed until August and it has just reopened following the second lockdown. We must now progress urgent repairs to the Palladian-style heritage facade of the building. Parts of the wooden soffits and fascia are rotten and several pieces have fallen off. This can be seen from the main photograph above, and you can see that it is crumbling away there, and the images below." There's no images below. "Pigeons are now roosting in the exposed space beneath the roof. There is a risk of water ingress here, and also from masonry cracks, particularly at ground level. The cost of the required work is estimated at around £35,000. In short, the Lido needs some love, and we can't afford to rely entirely on our charity's critical reserves to repair and restore it at this time. Were we to do so, this would leave the Lido very vulnerable in the event of yet another COVID-19 lockdown." Yes, it's a great shame. I remember actually swimming outside in the Lido pool in the late 1960s when I was a student at King Alfred's College.
And virus cases continue to fall. The number of new coronavirus cases in the Winchester district continues to fall, according to the latest government data. In the 7 days to Tuesday afternoon, there were 49 cases, compared to 98 in the previous seven. The number of coronavirus cases in the Winchester district increased in the last 24 hours to Tuesday from 1,790 to 1,800, an infection rate since March of 1,441.6 per 100,000. The currently worst affected area in the Winchester district are Whiteley, Knowle and Wickham. In the 7 days to December the 3rd, there have been 15 cases, an increase of 7.1%, or a rolling number of 128.1 per 100,000. The figures are based on tests carried out in laboratories, Pillar 1 of the government's testing programme, and in the wider community, Pillar 2. For clarity, Winchester District comprises more than the built-up city and is the council area which stretches from Micheldever in the north to Southwark in the south, from Sparsholt in the west to Bramdean in the east. Meanwhile, 31 people are reported to have died in the Hampshire of COVID-19 in the last 7 days to Tuesday. The death toll in the county council area was 869, up from 838. In Winchester City Council area, the figures for deaths is up 2 week on week to 98. In Portsmouth, it is up 106, up 6, and in 136 in Southampton, up 2. Figures published by NHS England show that over the last week, 6 people are reported to have died in the area covered by the Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which includes the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. So far at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, there have been 215 deaths, up 2. 227 people have died at University Hospital Southampton, no change, whilst at Portsmouth Hospital's NHS Trust, the toll is up. 297 is now 297, up 3. Since the start of the pandemic, there have been a total of 765 deaths in the NHS across Hampshire.
And I'm afraid that concludes the extract for the week ending 11th of December 2020. Thank you to our editors, Sonia Phillips, Sheila Shepard and Sheila Shepherd. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to today's reader, Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now and hope you stay safe and well in the week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.